Coach Brian Agler has served as a head coach for the WNBA Seattle Storm since 2008, and he also acts as the director of player personnel. Coach Agler recently led the Storm to an impressive WNBA championship run in 2010, including a 21-0 record at home. He was the head coach and general manager of the Minnesota Lynx from 99 to 2002, and prior to that was an assistant with the Seattle Silver Stars and Phoenix Mercury. Coach Agler also served as the head coach of the Columbus Quest of the ABL from 96 to 99, compiling an impressive 82-22 record. Really thrilled to have Coach with us today. Coach, are you there?
I am.
Good to have you with us. We appreciate the time.
Well, Seth and Lindsay, thanks for having me on.
I understand you're on your way back from a long week of watching some hoops over at the Boo Williams tournament.
Well, I'm back home now. I was down watching my daughter play over the weekend and really enjoyed that. Saw a lot of basketball, got a little beach time in, and just had a great weekend.
Oh, great to hear it. Hey, you know, with Boo Williams in mind, I'm curious, Coach, what are your general observations in terms of the caliber of play coming out of this type of event?
Well, this is my third time down there, and I've always enjoyed going down and watching the event. Obviously, they play all over the city at a variety of sites, but they have the one main facility there that they, I think they have eight courts in, and it's, you know, it's just a great opportunity for a lot of these young ladies to showcase their skills, and obviously their spring and summer teams are playing. I think most of these are Nike teams at the Boo Williams now, but it's a great event, especially for college coaches. This is a weekend where the college coaches can be out recruiting and observing, and there were hundreds of those coaches around over the weekend.
Oh, fantastic. You know, a lot of the coaches on our call this evening are working with athletes of a similar age group who also have similar aspirations to get, you know, to move from high school and play Division One, Two, Three, any post-secondary basketball. Curious, what in your assessment would be the things that you'd say to these coaches that they can do to help their kids stand out to a good coach and successfully make that transition to college ball?
Well, I think that obviously it starts at a real young age. You know, I'm a firm believer in teaching the fundamentals of the game at a young age. That's where kids learn how to play. Obviously, they don't. Not all of the young ladies or men get a chance to start when they're four or five or six. They, you know, sometimes don't pick up basketball till maybe even in middle school or early years of high school. But having a strong foundation of fundamentals is critical, and then just, you know, getting opportunities to play the game and improve their skills. I think from a coaching standpoint, I don't think it really matters what level you're coaching at. You want players that are very coachable. And, you know, part of that is, you know, understanding and enjoying the practice setting and working each and every day to get better. You know, being a good person, a good citizen. Obviously, if they want to go to college, you know, being a quality student is very important as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, basketball is a team game, and part of that, and I guess I should say a big part of that, is being able to play within a team concept. You know, everybody has a role on a team, and some roles are bigger than other roles. But it's important that, you know, each individual understands what their role really is.
Hmm. Okay. It's an interesting thought, you know, that you hone in on being coachable and playing within a team concept. You know, this is one of those I know it's one of the struggles that coaches have is especially in this day and age where the emphasis seems to be now on the individual athlete versus team. So, you know, as a coach, how do you teach, how would you teach or deal with a group of individuals to make them become a team?
Well, fortunately for myself, and I think that the older the players are, the less parental or outside involvement you have. But the younger they are, you're going to have a lot of outside involvement, people giving opinions and those types of things. And it's difficult. You know, it's a tough thing to do. I think that it obviously takes a tremendous amount of communication. And you know, there has to be a trust factor between, you know, the parties to be and the coach. And I think that no matter what the situation is, that communication is critical to get people to buy in and understand really what the goals of the team are and also the roles of each individual. I do know that, you know, when you're coaching teams that are elementary age, middle school age, high school age, you have a tendency to get a ton of involvement from the parents, and it's not always positive. And it does take a great organization in terms of maybe your administration and things like that to really keep things in check. And but I really think that a lot of it has to do with communication from the beginning. You know, don't wait till problems start happening. You know, really from the initial meeting or initial practice, set the standards and let everybody know, from the parents to the players to the grandparents to the teachers to whoever it might be, that this is how things are going to operate.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, you touched on trust, and I heard you mention buy-in. Are there specific things that that you do to develop trust with your players, building rapport, or, you know, what do you do to create buy-in?
Well, I think communication is a key, and I also think that, you know, actions speak much louder than words. And, you know, if you're going to tell somebody that they can trust you, then you got to show them that they can trust you. And it's up to the coach to really start that trend. And, you know, you have to prove that in the beginning in little ways. And then the more you prove that over time, the more you're going to have trust of the people that you're working with. And then buying into you hear this statement a lot, buying into the system. Well, it's almost like you have to be a politician. You have to do a couple things. You have to earn their trust. You have to have a philosophy that's sound. And the reason I say sound is because it has to have some kind of level of success. And if people can see that, and success doesn't mean winning and losing games. Success means whatever the goals are, they're obtainable and you're moving in that direction. And if you can do those things, then I think, you know, most players and people involved in a certain program can buy into what's going on.
And with that in mind, how would you describe, or what would you describe your personal philosophy? You had, you've had a lot of success for a long period of time. What's your philosophy as a coach?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Tomorrow I'm going down to Wittenberg University I'm going to talk with the students that are potentially going to be coaches after they graduate, and to touch on a lot of these same things. But, you know, I think having a philosophy is very important. And that doesn't mean that you have to be set in stone and never change. I think a philosophy can ever be changing, but I think there has to be a beginning point. And, you know, people are going to learn the game and teach the game by the way that they were taught. And so if you had an opportunity to play for very good coaches that had a solid and sound foundation and philosophy, then you're probably going to have a chance to, you know, move with that and share that with the people that you're coaching. But from my standpoint, you know, I've always focused on the defensive end, man-to-man principles. You know, I played and grew up, you know, in the Bobby Knight era. And so, you know, man-to-man defense and motion offense were sort of the things that were taught in those days. And I still keep a lot of those same principles on both ends of the floor, you know, both offensively and defensively, mostly at the defensive end still. And I also think at the offensive end, the one thing that I've seen sort of change here lately is the fact that you know, if you watch international basketball, or you watch a lot of professional teams now, even the college game has gone to this, is the focus there's probably more as much focus on the spacing of the floor as there is on the movement of the people on the floor. I think spacing is really emphasized now. I know it is in our league, and spacing and let the players create and force the defense to make decisions. I think the defenses have gotten so good now, and the game's gotten physical enough that the more actions you have between people, the more the defense can clog the lane and jam things up and take the timing out of offenses. Where I think to combat that, people have gone to more just spacing the floor and letting people create with the basketball and play out of that situation.
Interesting. Okay. And so is that an approach that you're now adopting in terms of what you guys are doing offensively?
Well, we have. We changed last year, made some changes, not all changes, but we worked a lot on put more pick and roll into our offense, and we have. And I do think this. I think you have to look at your team and your personnel and see, you know, what is going to fit there as well. And we have one of the, you know, greatest point guards ever to play the game on our team in Sue Bird, and she obviously can make everybody better that she plays with. And we put more pick and roll in to make sure that we could, you know, get the ball into her hands more and let her be more the decision maker. And it's worked well. Now, to do that, you have to be able to space the floor, and you have to have people on the floor that are going to be defended. You know, you can space the floor, but if they can't shoot the basketball, then they're not going to be guarded anyway. So you got to put people, you know, on the floor that can give reason to space and spread the defense out.
You touched on something that we had actually discussed and touched on. Coach Thibault from the Connecticut Sun had talked about designing an offense. And one of the things that was a discussion point was whether you're creating an offense and fitting your personnel in it, or if you're creating an offense around your personnel based on what they can and can't do. What's your take on that approach?
Well, I think you have to do a little bit of both. Like I said, most people have a philosophy, and they have taught things and been taught things and offenses that work well. Now, that being said, you still have to, you know, adapt to the personnel that you have and let players play to their strengths and let your best players play to their strengths, obviously. So I think you have to do a little bit of both, and that was sort of, you know, our adjustment last year is, okay, we've got, you know, one of the great point guards ever to play the game, and we have so many possessions where she's not the deciding factor on what happens. So why not, you know, have the ability to not necessarily change our offense, but what we've done is we used our offense. We only have a 24-second shot clock, so we have to do this, you know, pretty efficiently, is run our offense but not have a beginning and an end, but have our beginning, and if we don't get anything through that quick entry, then create pick-and-roll situations, be able to flow right into a pick-and-roll, whether it's in the middle of the floor or side pick-and-roll, and put the ball in either her hands or Tanisha Wright's hands, who's another very good pick-and-roll player that we have on our team. And it's just it's worked out well. It's given us a good flow, and again, it puts the ball in the hands of the person that we want to decide what happens on the floor with our team.